Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
On this episode of the Oklahoma Breakdown with Akron Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino, we continue our breakdown of OU's roster, talking some defensive ends. Then South Carolina head coach Shane Beamer joins us for an interview, and we finish up with our winners and losers of the week. Please download and subscribe to the podcast, rate it 5 stars, and write us a good review. Follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search Oklahoma Breakdown on any of those, and you'll find us. All right, our man Michael Hostie will kick this thing off. It's time for the Oklahoma Breakdown. It's a beautiful Wednesday, April 3rd, and you're listening to the Oklahoma Breakdown with Iker and Lehman, presented by Riverwind Casino. Riverwind is Oklahoma City's premier casino experience, and there are so many reasons why Riverwind is consistently voted OKC's number one casino, but it all starts with their amazing variety of gaming thrills and excitement. Riverwind's beautiful award-winning environment plays host to more than 2,800 of the latest electronic games, with a huge selection of table games, including blackjack, blackjack match roulette, and Teddy's favorite, craps. No matter what your game, Riverwind has it in spades and hearts. And to learn more about their gaming promotions and entertainment options in the month of April, all you got to do is visit Riverwind.com. Riverwind Casino, simply the best. Now, please leave us a 5-star review and a nice comment. Also, if your business wants to advertise on the podcast, you can email us at theoklahomabreakdown@gmail.com. Ted, our guy Shane Beamer's back.
The best human being ever.
He is a top-notch human being, and I'm just glad he came back. I wasn't sure they're on the schedule this year. I was a little nervous he would say no, but of course he said yes.
I hope we beat him, but not too bad, because he may not come on next year.
Fair enough.
I'm sure he will. I'm sure he will.
He's one of our favorites, so you guys are going to love that interview on this episode with Shane. But let's start with what we always start with, and that is OU football. And we're going to continue our roster breakdown with the edge position, the defensive end position. But first, an important note: Brent Venables talked about Troy Everett after practice today and said that he's going to have surgery on Wednesday. They're hoping to have him back by the end of training camp. Now, I know it's not ACL related, which is good, but you hate to hear that about a guy who was really trying to establish himself at that center position and was trying to increase his role as a leader of that offensive line. Just that's a rough loss, man.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird to say, because he's a transfer portal guy, but I mean, the most experienced offensive lineman in this offense, you know, in this system, that we have, you know, because no one else has really played. I mean, Sexton's got a little bit of time. There's a little bit in there, but you know, he's going to be missed, but he's going to have to be one of those guys, and kind of cliche, but a coach out there on the field as he's recovering and kind of mentoring whoever takes over that position, because I mean, that's going to be a big spot. I mean, that's a big deal right now.
It is. It's a big opportunity for Josh Bates.
Yeah.
It's a massive opportunity. He has the opportunity to take that job and never give it up. And we'll see if he makes the most of this opportunity or not. Now, Garen Hatchett, remember the Washington transfer. He has the ability to play center, but he hasn't really done much of anything in spring ball because of the ankle surgery after his season with Washington. So Josh Bates, this is a golden opportunity for him to prove that he can be the starting center. And I'm just going to be real about it. He's got the rest of spring ball probably to prove to them that they don't need to go get someone in the transfer portal. That's how college football works. So he's got a chance to earn the starting job. I can't wait to see what he does with the opportunity.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes. You know, it's interesting. I hope he can grab it and run with it and make some big improvement, because like that's a coveted spot at Oklahoma. And you know, you hate that Everett got injured, and you know, who knows what's in the transfer portal, but I want someone who's been here for a while in that spot. It's kind of weird. Does that make sense? Like a center to just grab a plug and play, you know, I don't know. We haven't had that, right? It's been all guys that have been multi-year starters for as long as I can remember. So I don't know. I hope it's someone on the roster that takes it and runs with it.
Yeah, we'll see. But it's an opportunity for a couple guys, but I'm bummed for Troy.
Yeah.
I really like that guy. Like his attitude. He'd had a great winter. I think that he was really excited for his opportunity to take that starting job. And you go down in spring ball, it's the last thing you want. But we'll see what comes of the center position. It's an important one in this offense. Yeah.
Any chance Ozaida could play center, or is that?
I don't know if he's capable of snapping the ball. He's also pretty huge.
Yeah.
But if you could teach him everything, and I'm sure it's not the hardest thing in the world to learn. I'm not going to pretend that it's rocket science, but I think if you're throwing a redshirt freshman into the fire and he's capable of playing guard, like playing guard is harder than playing center, in my opinion, or at least that's how it was in my experience. And I think he just might be your second best guard behind Wiwu right now. So
yeah,
you're probably going to want that guy at guard.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but this entire situation is an unfortunate development. You've got a lot of question marks across this offensive line. And now you take a guy from, you know, what I've been able to witness, who was kind of the vocal leader of that group right now. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal, Ted. I'm not panicking. I'm not freaking out. I'm just bummed for Troy Everett.
Yeah. Yeah. That's tough. And you know, we'll see if he can find a way back in some decent time. And I don't know, but you know, you mentioned it right away. Great opportunity. It's a great opportunity for Bates. We'll see what he can do with it.
On to the roster breakdown. We've talked about a lot about the interior defensive line and how that could possibly be maybe the biggest question mark on the football team, but certainly the biggest question mark on the defense. Ted, I was going through the edge guys, and you've got a couple of experienced guys that have played a lot of ball, right? Ethan Downs, that's where the conversation starts. Trace Ford has been in college for forever now. Caden Woolard, the transfer from Miami of Ohio, has played a lot of football. But after those three guys, that's really all you got from an experience standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the rest of the guys, you've got limited experience and even more limited production. This is a group that, as I went through it, maybe it's more of a question mark than I thought.
Well, I mean,
I don't like how long your pause was.
Well, I thought you I'm sorry. I was waiting on you. You know what you're going to get from Downs. I think we know what we're going to get from Trace Ford. And you know, Venables was talking about like he's like the healthiest he's been, which is a good place to be. I mean, you got to expect that PJ is going to develop some. I mean, it's still early in spring, in his second spring. If our Mason Thomas is healthy, then I don't know what – you got four guys. Did we have four experienced players last year at edge? Yeah, I guess we did. But, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm not too worried about the experience factor as long as your freshmen come along. You know, you're always going to be rotating guys in that don't have experience. You know, with Taylor Wine and the good things we've heard about him, doesn't have experience, but it's his second year in the system. PJ, it's his second year in the system. He got a little bit of time last year. I mean, I think we're okay experience-wise. Now, can we stay healthy is a different story. I mean, Trace Ford has an injury history, and our Mason Thomas has an injury history after last year. I don't know that he's put, you know, very many games together since he's been here, and it's going to be going into his third season. So, you do have a point, though, that it's one of those that we just kind of checked the box previously and said we'll be fine, and then you kind of go down the list and there's like some big ifs in there. We'll be fine if we stay healthy. We'll be fine if the young guys come along and develop at a pretty good clip.
I'm with you on Downs. I feel like at this point, you know, you know exactly what you're going to get from him.
Mm-hmm.
And it is all about physicality. I mean, you're never going to question the guy's physicality. You're never going to question the effort. He does a really good job of holding point in the run game. He's not the most natural pass rusher, mm-hmm. right? More of a power guy than, you know, a guy that's going to throw a bunch of different hand movements at you. Just a really good football player. And he's one of the guys, I'm not really worried about him holding up physically to the physicality he's going to see week in and week out in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
And he is by far, I mean, your most productive guy returning that's been a part of this program.
Yep.
And he only had 4.5 sacks last year. And he only had 6.5 tackles for loss. It kind of just tells you where this group is at from a production standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go into a deep conversation about, you know, how many teams in the Big 12 were getting rid of the football extremely quickly, but it also is just kind of eye-opening when you look at the stats. Like Trace Ford, he didn't have a sack last year. He had 3.5 tackles for loss. R. Mason Thomas had 1 sack, 2.5 TFLs. PJ had 1.5 sacks, 3 TFLs. I mean, the only guy that has statistic to get your attention is what Caden Woolard did at Miami of Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
9.5 sacks. So I, when you look at, and I know it's not just about the stat sheet, but when you look at the production of the guys that are going to be the guys on the field for him this year, you know, with a, let's call it a step up in the level of competition that they're going to face week in and week out. I don't think it's alarming, but it just, it got my attention. I know that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of truth to it. You know, I think, you know, with Ethan Downs, you got to have a guy like that that's big and strong and physical. You're going to see some huge tackles and very physical run games. Trace Ford, that's not really his thing. You know, they used him as a stand-up guy a couple of times. I thought he played his best game of the year against Oklahoma State. He was all over the place. I mean, the real thing where, like, the conversation is, are Mason Thomas and PJ, what do we get out of those guys, right? Those are the athletes. Those are the, you know, we've been told our Mason Thomas is the best pass rusher we have for two straight years, and it hasn't equaled a whole lot of production for him. And a lot of that is because he just hasn't been available. And PJ is still incredibly raw, has a ton of great tools. You know, he's still early. You know, we're not even halfway through spring yet. So, I mean, that's where the real production is going to come from. I mean, let's call it how it is. Like, what you get from Woolard, you know, is probably going to be kind of a savvy bet kind of guy. That's a rotational player, I would imagine, and can maybe get you some plays here and there. Taylor Wine is, I haven't seen him yet, but I'm anxious to see what he looks like. But I mean, I'd be shocked if he turned into your pass rush specialist. If we're going to have difference makers, like legit SEC edge guys, it's going to come from those two guys, R. Mason Thomas and PJ. And like, clock is ticking. I mean, no pressure, but like, that's what we're waiting on.
It feels like there's pressure on those two guys.
I know.
To reach the potential. It feels like there's some pressure on Miguel Chavis to get them to reach their potential as well. Because when you look at those two guys in particular, and R. Mason isn't the tallest guy, like he doesn't have the best length, but the get off, the explosiveness, it doesn't take you know, many snaps when he's healthy to realize, okay, yeah, that guy's got some serious twitch when he's right. You know, he's just got to stay on the field though.
Yeah.
I mean, can he stay healthy? Can he hold up for 30 to 40 plays a game against an SEC opponent and then do it the next week and the next week and the next week? I think that's the big question for him. And for PJ, you try not to put too much pressure on a young player, but when you see him, that
we gotta have you.
You gotta have him.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't look like he's quite made the jump yet to me, but he's so physically gifted and the traits are so elite that jump, I don't know when it's going to come, but I feel like when he makes that jump, it's going to happen fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
When everything kind of just comes together for him. I'm just really hoping it's before we kick this thing off in the fall.
Yeah. Well, we've got a long time. I mean, not really, but you know, you got the rest of spring. Like, he should really be. He's one of those guys, you know, when you're going into your second spring, which is, it's weird because it's really his first spring, but it's his second spring, you know, it's usually where you make the most jumps, like the largest jump. He should really be a different player coming out of spring than he was going in. It's like, you had your first year, you know that you look like a newborn deer out there at times, okay? You go through winter conditioning, you're working the drills, you're watching all the horrible film, and then you go back out to spring, and day one, you're the same guy. But by the time you walk out of there, you really should have known, like, at this point, you know what your biggest strengths are, what your biggest weaknesses are, and you can't let it continue to be the same thing, like holding you back. And, you know, we could probably find a handful of things for him like you can everyone, but we should really be, by the time we're coming out of spring ball, we should be hearing his name starting to pop up.
At the very least, with his length, and I know everyone wants defensive ends, edge guys that can get to the quarterback. But with his length, he should be elite when it comes to stopping the run. Mm-hmm. Those arms are weapons, man. And there's a lot of different variables when it comes to getting sacks or getting QB pressures, like all that stuff. But being able to take two hands and press an offensive lineman backwards, there's not much involved in that.
Nope.
And at the very least, he should be elite at that because he just has absurd length, Ted. Mm-hmm. Now, Your hope is he's stuffing the run and then he's able to convert and he just turns into an absolute menace of a football player. But he's got to become elite at something. I expect him to be really, really good against the run in his second year. And hopefully all the other stuff comes with it.
Yeah, there's going to be a moment, and maybe it's like rotation wise, he's going against a down, like a third string tackle or something. But there's going to be a moment where he butts and he separates and he gets someone locked out and comes off and makes a play. And he's like, huh, okay. And then he's going to be able to replicate it at a pretty high rate pretty soon after. It's just, you got to have a couple of wins that feel really good and look good on film. And you believe that you can do it. You start figuring out that, like, hey, this may be my thing.
I guess to the other guys, Nigel Smith, heard some really good things about Nigel Smith from the coaching staff. Seems like he has flashed when it comes to the young guys. Danny Okoye is an exciting prospect. I think that I'm not sure he's going to be much of a factor this season. Maybe could be a situational rusher type guy with the athleticism, the explosiveness he has. But there's a couple of young guys to be pretty excited about as well. But you're hoping that, you know, the 4, 5, 6 guys that have been around are, you know, are able to go out there and make plays for you, and that you don't have to play true freshmen in your first year in the SEC, but injuries happen. You never know. So it's good to hear good stuff, especially about Nigel Smith.
Yeah. You'd like to get those guys out there. Maybe at least in the non-conference, get them some field time and get them some snaps, try and get acclimated to the speed of the game and kind of know what they're up against. And, you know, Danny Okoye, he's a freshman, but I think he's older. I think he may be like 19, almost 20 years old, right? So, you know, physically he should be pretty advanced. And, you know, the good thing about freshmen that you're not really asking to depend on is you can figure out what they're good at and kind of, you know, run blitzes or stuff to their side to where they know what gap they're going into and kind of just allow them to go out there and play a little more free and keep them out of situations where they're trying to read and react to a bunch of different things. But I mean, it's back to that. Like it's our Mason Thomas and his PJ. What do we get out of those guys? Like that, if this group is like, I expect them, they're going to be okay. Right. But if they're great, it's probably going to come from what leaps those two guys make.
I completely agree. I feel like, you know what you're going to get from Downs. You know the type of player he is. You hope that Trace Ford can stay healthy. I feel like you know what you're going to get out of him. He doesn't have the length that some of these other guys have. I think that lack of length kind of limits his ceiling when it comes to production, just going to be honest.
I think he's best whenever they play that three-man front and he plays that stand-up. It's almost opposite the cheetah spot, and he drops out to the flat and into the curl or blitzes off the edge. I think that's where he's best suited.
I agree with that, but it really is going to be about what, hey, what do you get from Woolard? Does it translate? Does what he did in the group of five translate to the best conference in all of college football? And then what do you get from your two most explosive, most gifted guys? Mm-hmm. You got to pull it out of them one way or another.
Yeah. I mean, hey, we've done a great job getting them here. Now, next thing is to turn them into killers. And like, that's probably, maybe that's the easier of the two. I don't know, but I mean, the pressure's on because you cannot survive in the SEC without having guys on the line of scrimmage, and especially at edge with tackles and big tight ends and, you know, some of the quarterbacks and the run game we're going to see. You've got to have some guys on the edge that are weapons.
No doubt about it. All right, let's get to call your shot. We asked you guys your most passionate feeling right now about the defensive ends for the Sooners. This one comes from Jason Hittle, who says PJ and R. Mason Thomas have to step up this year. Downs, Woolard, and Trace Ford will be good too, but if PJ and RMT take the next step, we will be great at edge this year.
What are we even here for?
Yeah.
All right.
Jason, you should start a podcast. You just said yep. It in you know, a couple sentences. It took us 20 whatever minutes to say it.
That's it though. You've said it a bunch of times and I totally agree. You don't have to be a brainiac whenever you walk down on the field and you see PJ to recognize that, okay, that guy right there needs to somehow become your best player on defense. I mean, that's, we all know.
This other one comes from at CF Stan 82. He says the defensive ends have got to be more of a factor in the outcome of the games. The pass rush has been lacking recently, and the QB needs to feel that pressure next year. Going into the SEC, they will be a pivotal part of the defense. You disagree with any of that?
No, and frankly, it's something that, you know, we've talked about some in the past is I am not happy with what we've seen pass rush technique wise off the edges. I mean, I'm not seeing guys really work their hands and work their rushes nearly enough. And, you know, and honestly, to be fair, they don't get a whole lot of opportunities. You don't get just a bunch of straight drop back pass. You know, it's always something that they're throwing at them, quick game or RPO stuff, whatever. But we need to start seeing some guys really show some skills, having a plan, having a go-to rush, having a go-to counter off of that, you know, beating some people with speed, having some get off. Like, we don't look like we are top level pass rushers, like as a group. And that needs to change. That needs to start happening.
PJ, R. Mason Thomas. Come on, guys.
Let's go. Let's
make
go.
The whole group look good if you just go out there and ball out. All right, let's talk to our man, Shane Beamer. But first, Love's Travel Stops is now offering a nationwide 10-cent per gallon discount on gas and auto diesel. Just download the Love's Connect app and scan your barcode at the prompt on screen and watch that price drop 10 cents per gallon. Across the country, the Love's Connect app unlocks exclusive deals that can help any traveler plan their route or meal on the highway. So before you hit the road, Be sure to download the Love's Connect app to save 10 cents per gallon and experience the country's best highway hospitality at Love's Travel Stops. Love's also has you covered if you forget your phone charger or headphones with their expanded mobile to go zone. And of course, don't forget to grab yourself some of that delicious Java Hummole.
And celebrate with a Schooner All-American Ale, the official craft beer of OU Athletics from Coop Ale Works. Named after the iconic Sooner Schooner that races across Owen Field after an OU score, you can join in on the celebration with an ice-cold beer from Coop Ale Works. You can enjoy it at the Palace on the Prairie, at OU Athletic events, at the bar, tailgate, and in the comfort of your own home. For more information on Schooner All-American Ale, visit schoonerale.com. Must be 21 to purchase. Please drink responsibly. Schooner All-American Ale, the taste of game day.
And we love Simple Modern. Simple Modern is an Oklahoma-owned drinkware company who launched the best cups it's ever made with its new signature line this month. They're 100% leak-proof, which is what everyone needs with an on-the-go cup. And it has a ceramic coating on the top of the double-insulated stainless steel to preserve the beverage's taste while still keeping it cold and hot for hours. And even better, Simple Modern exists to give generously, donating 10% of all profits. So you can know you're helping better Oklahoma and beyond with every purchase. Check it all out at simplemodern.com today. All right, here's our guy, Shane Beamer. It is our pleasure to be joined by the head coach of the South Carolina Gamecocks. He's our guy, baby. He's back. Even though we're in the SEC now, he still comes on the pod because he loves us, or at least that's what I think it means. Shane Beamer is in the house. What's going on, man?
What's up, fellas? Absolutely love you, and I'm just glad you still asked me to be on with you guys. So look forward to it each year.
We do too. We do too, and I'm, as usual, I am fired up to talk to you. And unfortunately, we're going to start with a little of the disappointment from last season.
Okay.
And you finish 2022 on such a high note with the wins over Tennessee and Clemson, and then a really fun bowl game, all kinds of excitement. And then what, a 2-6 start? You end up 5-7 on the season. Shane, what went wrong?
Kind of a combination, and not to make excuses, combination of injuries and youth. Knew we had a chance depth-wise. I knew we weren't where we needed to be going into the year, but felt like we had a chance if we could stay healthy. We weren't able to. We had 12 season-ending injuries as the year went on, 6 on the offensive line, started 5 true freshmen. And again, that's, we're not sitting here patting ourselves on the back with moral victories, but we kind of everything that we faced a lot of adversity from that standpoint. Had a chance to win. It wasn't like we were just getting the brakes beat off of us each week. We had a chance to win every game. Had Georgia down 14-3 at halftime and won 3 of 4 down the stretch, beat Kentucky. You know, we had some good moments, but we just weren't consistent enough. You know, early in the season, it was defense playing well, offense struggling, then offense started playing well, and the defense struggled midway through the season. And late in the year, we were struggling a little bit offensively in the last couple games, and the defense was back to playing well. So just inconsistent and a combination of things. Didn't do a good enough job coaching, but, you know, learn from it and certainly will be better for it.
Well, what's the building blocks for this coming season? I know you guys you're in spring football right now and working through some of that stuff. And how's the recruiting been? And like we all love to talk about, the transfer portal, right? You got to win the transfer portal every year.
Yep. It's good. Still in the early stages, like every college football team out there, like every year is literally starting over, because you have so many new faces, freshmen, transfers, and we're no different. It's good that for us right now, pretty much our entire freshman class is here going through spring practice. All the, I guess, 3 of our signees are here. Everybody else are in there's only 3 guys that will be here in the summertime. The rest of the freshmen graduated high school early, so they're able to go through spring ball, which is great, like the transfer portal class. And it's good that, you know, we've got some new faces, but we also bring back really a core group of guys off last year's team. We return quite a few guys, a lot of guys that are going into their, you know, fifth year in our program as well. So an older veteran group that weren't happy with the way that the season ended, our season went last season, and are back, and a good mix of new guys that came in via the portal or high school recruiting.
You mentioned it's basically just starting over each year. You bring in recruits, you bring in transfers, you retain as many of your guys as you can. As the head coach, how do you fit it all together? Like, what is your approach to trying to work the new guys into your culture? And like, what is that process like for you?
Yeah, no, it's something I think we're still trying to figure out the right way, you know, to do it, and feel like we've got a really strong culture here with the people in the program. But, you know, one thing I learned from last season, and we knew every year starting over, but just trying to be even more intentional about trying to come together as a team and build those connections in a short period of time, and making sure everybody knows one another, and player to coach, coach to player, coach to coach. We have four new assistant coaches on our staff. So just trying to be who we are. Like I said, it helps that we got a core group of guys returning that can help get the new guys to come along and kind of learn how we do things, but also trying to be even more intentional about and purposeful about building those connections and ingraining the new guys into how we do things as well.
I saw you talked about some staff additions. Saw you hired a new wide receiver coach, Mike Furry. We played in Detroit together. What a good dude, man, and a hell of a football player.
He's awesome. You're the second guy I was talking to today that had played with him in Detroit. As a matter of fact, I was on the phone with Sean Bryson. That's a great high school coach as well. And Sean had mentioned that as well. Mike's been awesome. You talk about what an amazing story. I mean, the guy's a college walk-on that goes from the Arena League to gets his shot in the NFL with the Rams.
Is it Northern Iowa something like that? Yeah.
Yeah. And then goes to the St. Louis Rams, gets his shot, plays receiver, part of the greatest show on turf. And then they come to him and say, "We don't know if you can be a receiver anymore. We'd like for you to play defense." So then he goes and he starts at safety in the NFL for an entire season, gets cut, and then gets hooked on in Detroit, leads the NFC in receptions 1 year. Yeah, with Mike Martz.
Mike Martz came to Detroit and
that's right.
Safety with him.
Yeah. So he's been awesome, though. Great person. Guy that has obviously played at the highest level, and I met him last summer. He actually brought his son to our summer football camp last summer, and I got a chance to meet him and remember talking to him and thinking, you know, something different about this guy. And then we had a wide receiver's job open, and he reached out and you know, we had plans to interview multiple people, and we met with him, myself, and our offensive coordinator. We both kind of looked at each other and we were like, "We can interview some other people, but we ain't going to find anybody more impressive than that guy that we just met with." And he's been awesome so far, and couldn't be more excited about him being here.
Now, you mentioned that you've got a bunch of new assistants, which made me think of something a lot of people have been talking about lately when it comes to coaches maybe not wanting to coach in college anymore with NIL, the portal, everything that comes with it, the demands on the time, on your time. Was that your experience? Did you have trouble finding guys to fill the voids in your staff, or were there plenty of people still interested in coaching college football? Because it feels like some people are led to believe that no one wants to coach in college anymore.
Yeah. No, it's a great question. I didn't find that, and I get it. I think that's always been the case. I mean, there's always been, I think, college coaches that one either see the NFL as like the ultimate level because you're at the highest of the highs, and there's only 32 of them in the world. So I think there's always been coaches that have wanted to get to the NFL, and then there's always been coaches even before the transfer portal and NIL. You heard about college coaches that wanted to go to the NFL because they didn't have to recruit. You know, like when we're in the college game, when you're off, if you're on vacation, you're not off. I mean, you're still texting and making phone calls. You talk to these NFL guys and they go on vacation for 5 weeks and don't even look at their phone for 5 weeks. That would be unheard of for a college coach. So I think that's always been the case, but certainly with what's going on in college athletics, there's some things that are more, make it more challenging than ever, without a doubt. But the people that we talked to, they were guys that wanted to stay in college coaching. Everything that we got into college coaching for is still around. Are there things that are different that we have to adapt to? Absolutely. We are learning and doing things for the first time, navigating transfer portal NIL. But coaches that we talked to, they weren't like, oh, my God, like, I got to stay in college again. I really want to try and get to the NFL. It was guys that wanted to be in college and continue to pour into young people and be a part of everything that's great with the college game.
What's going to be the plan at quarterback? You know, Rattler's gone, which, you know, it sounds like some NFL teams think pretty highly of him, and, you know, playing in the system that you guys have has a lot to do with that. What are you guys going to do at the quarterback spot?
Yeah, Spencer was fantastic. You know, I think he really grew. Teams really became even more interested in him with the way that he handled himself last year because we had so many injuries on the offensive line. We started a true freshman left tackle and a true freshman left guard in the SEC for 10 plus games. And he was under pressure a lot, but handled it well and was a great teammate. So couldn't be more excited about what's going to happen with him in the draft later this month. And then as far as us, it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. It's kind of got a little bit of everything in that room right now. And we're certainly in the middle of a competition. We bring two quarterbacks back. Luke Doty, who actually has been here since 2020 and has played some quarterback and played some receiver both for us. He's still in the mix. We have a freshman that we redshirted last year. He was able to play in a few games by the name of Lenoris Sellers that we're excited about. Think that he's got a big-time future. We brought in a true freshman that graduated high school early by the name of Dante Reno. His dad's the head coach at Yale. He's going to be a good player. And then we brought in two guys in the transfer portal, Robbie Ashford, who has started games at Auburn as well and has played at a high level. He's in the mix. And then someone that you guys are familiar with, and Davis Bevel. Davis transferred here as well and is going through spring practice also. So we got five guys in there that are competing, got some guys fresh out of high school, some guys that have started games in college, and everything in between. So we're trying to get in there and compete and see how it all shakes itself out and who separates himself between now and the start of the season.
It's a great way of doing it. Just get as many as you can and see who emerges from the pack. I love that. Now, looking at, across the rest of your roster, Shane, is there any position group in particular that you feel really good about right now with where you guys are at in spring practice, maybe from a talent and depth perspective?
Yeah, I'd say two positions stand out, and there's a lot that I feel good about. You never feel great about any of them. You always want to increase the depth, but really linebacker and defensive line are two positions that we have, you know, between the guys that we return off last year's team and then the people that we've added to it. I really think we're better, we're more athletic, and we're deeper at both those positions. If you take every D tackle that we had last season, they're all older guys that have played a lot of football here in the SEC, and they all come back. And then we added a couple transfers that have played at a high level at other schools as well, one from Oklahoma, one from Pittsburgh. So we now really have six guys on the at the defensive tackle position alone that have played meaningful snaps at a high level for multiple years. And then the linebacker position as well, we bring back our leading returning tackler, had more tackles here last season than I think any linebacker in like the last 10 years or something like that. And then we signed two freshmen that we're excited about, and we brought in two freshmen from the transfer portal as well, an all-conference linebacker from Charlotte and a linebacker from Pittsburgh. So both of those positions, you know, knock on wood, we have really solid depth there right now. We're athletic, we're experienced, and we've got some young freshmen that we're excited about as well.
What do you think is going to be most critical for you guys in the fall? And I know, judging from like what went down last season, staying healthy is probably number one, but what are some things that you know, whether it's looking back at last year that you didn't do well, or maybe things that you did do well, like what's the one thing that you guys just absolutely have to do this fall?
Well, I think always, you know, it's no secret. You guys have been around the game long enough. Turnover margin is such a huge statistic, and we've been really, really good at taking the ball away defensively. I think I'm right in saying this, that over the last three seasons, nobody in the SEC has more takeaways than our defense. So we got to continue to be good at taking the ball away. But we went, when I mentioned a minute ago, the inconsistency of last season, we went through a three-game stretch last season where we didn't create one takeaway on defense. So three straight games, we didn't force a turnover. And it's hard to win that way. And somehow or another, we still finished, I think, second in the SEC in takeaways. So just the consistency of being an opportunistic defense, protecting the ball is going to be, you know, key, staying healthy, you alluded to, and still we've got to be able, for us to have the success that we want to have, we've got to be better on the line of scrimmage and overall as an offense, and just being able to run the ball and protect the quarterback. We gave up way too many sacks last season, and we didn't do a good enough job running the ball. And y'all know, y'all have played the game. That's not all on the offensive line. That's on the quarterbacks. That's on the running backs. That's on the tight ends. That's on the receivers. But we got to be more efficient running the ball and protecting the quarterback than what we were last season, for sure.
When you have a disappointing season like y'all had last year, I think one of the natural reactions for people is to go, well, they need to change things.
Mm-hmm.
What's the balance like as the head coach when it comes to changing things, identifying what needs to be changed, but also, I mean, you're doing the things that you believe in.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, even whether it goes well or not. So what is that decision-making process when it comes to implementing those changes like for you?
Yeah. Nah, awesome question. And very much so, because every year it's year to year. You're only as good as your most recent game or your most recent season. And last season we were 5-7 and it wasn't good enough. But you also, in my mind, as the head coach, you got to look at the big picture and say, okay, a lot of these same people that, you know, people have the pitchforks out for right now, they were a part of the team that won 15 games over our first two seasons here and had great wins over Clemson and Texas A&M and Tennessee and Kentucky and North Carolina and Auburn and Florida, and some of the great wins that we've had over the last couple seasons. So I sit back and say, okay, do we need to make a change here when you look at the overall body of work? Or is it, do we need to, you know, continue to do what we're doing with these people, but just figure out how we're going to be better, because 5-7 in 2023 was not good enough. And in some instances, when I look back at it, I felt like a change was needed, whether it be from a personnel standpoint or how we do things in different departments. And really, you do this after every season, Gabe, but when you're 5-7, you really dive in and say, okay, training room, weight room, nutrition, equipment room, player development, coaching, whatever it might be, like where can we be better? You know, where did we miss this past season? And then it's my job. I sit back and look at everything. And yeah, some things we made changes in from a personnel standpoint. Some people, some way areas, we continue to do what we do and just say, let's do it better. And then there's other areas where we, you know, kept the same personnel, but, you know, tweaked some things that we're doing in our overall structure. But that's what I think it is. I think sometimes you got to be careful just to change for the sake of change. When you continue to do what you're doing with the right people, if you feel like you got the right people in place, and then it's my job to empower them and put them in position to be successful. And we had a lot of hard conversations in the month of December about, you know, what we did last season was not good enough. The way this group played or the way that group played, it's not good enough. The way that I coached wasn't good enough. And how am I going to be better? How are you going to be better as an assistant coach? And we had a lot of those tough, hard conversations throughout the winter months.
There's a lot of talk, I mean, constantly, because it's changing, but the landscape of college football right now, where obviously you got new people coming to the conference. There's a lot of realignment going on out there. We got a 12-team playoff. We got transfer portal stuff. We've got NIL stuff. What's been the most challenging for you? I mean, I think every program you know, maybe some of the spots are more challenging than others, but what's been the most challenging part of the changing landscape for you guys there at South Carolina?
I think probably like a lot of schools, just trying to get up to speed from an NIL standpoint. That and all, you know, everybody's in this boat, but everything just happened from a NIL aspect of it. And, you know, we want to be competitive, but we want to be honest with guys as well, and not just throw out different figures and things like that, that you're never going to be able to attain or get or do. And I think there's a lot of schools that maybe are a little bit more willing to throw out different figures and things like that, if you will. We try not to, but, you know, that's part of it. I think the biggest thing for me, Teddy, is just I'm a relationship person and really feel I want every player in our program to have an amazing experience at Carolina. And I truly care about and have a relationship with every single player on the team. And want them all to have a great experience. So it bothers me personally when someone that I don't want to lose comes to me and says they're going to enter the transfer portal for whatever reason. And that's hard. And some people would say, okay, great, let them go. You can go replace them with someone. And yeah, you do. You can't spend a lot of time worrying about the ones that choose to leave. But we've lost some guys here, one, you know, some for different reasons, and that's part of it. We've benefited from the transfer portal. Don't get me wrong, but it is hard as the head coach when someone that, you know, guys you truly care about call you and are going to go somewhere else. I that bothers me. But again, that's their right. Wish them well and understand that. But again, as the head coach, you hate for anybody to not want to be a part of your program, if that makes sense.
So with that in mind, I heard you do an interview with our buddy, Josh Pate.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you asked all your players after the season, what did they like? What did they not like about mm-hmm. every aspect of your program? And Shane, I'm interested, what surprised you the most? What was like the most surprising takeaway from those conversations with your players?
Good question. Probably when you have as many injuries as we did, you think, okay, human nature is going to be, all right, we have all these injuries. Let's blame the training room. And there must be something going on in the training room, and they don't like, they don't feel like they're at their best and things like that. And it couldn't have been the opposite. It was overwhelming how much they think of the people in our training room. And I know we had good trainers. I'm not saying that I expected them to say that. I just think it's human nature when a team has a lot of injuries, I just blame the trainers. And I don't know if there wasn't one person. I think the only complaint about the training room was treatment times were too early. And you guys can surely relate to that from your days as players.
I agree. I agree.
So I think that was literally the only complaint. So that was pretty cool to hear them say that. So that was one that was a little bit of a, all right, I didn't know if I anticipated that, but I agree with you. And it's good to hear you guys say that.
Anything that was like alarming where you were like, dang, we gotta fix this?
Yeah, not really. I think it goes back to what you guys asked a little bit ago, and I do believe that we were a close team. But looking back and meeting with guys and hearing them comment on things, we were, but we probably weren't as connected and close as I really truly wanted us to be. And we were, don't get me wrong, we're sitting there at 2-6 at one point. We win three games in a row and come into our last game with a chance to win and get to a bowl game and overcome all the adversity that we had last season, and we didn't get it done. So if you have a poor culture when you're 2-6, you're not gonna win three in a row. I don't care who you're playing. And we did. But it was probably just realizing that we could be even more aggressive and even more intentional about building those bonds and connections with not just the players, but the players, the coaches, and everybody in the building.
Where do you think we end up? I mean, I know we're going to a 12-team playoff and some realignment has settled a little bit, but it doesn't feel like the dust is going to settle on this thing before we've got some other movement and maybe some NIL legislation. Do you have any idea where we maybe end up in the next year or two?
No, I wish I did. You guys probably know more than I do. It feels like every week it changes, every month it changes. Just when you think that things are, you know, kind of under control, it's announced 2 summers ago that Oklahoma and Texas are coming into the SEC. And then all of a sudden, what was that? The summer, 2 summers ago, it's announced that Southern Cal and UCLA are leaving the Pac-12 to go to the Big Ten. And you're kind of like, okay, now you got a couple schools in the ACC that are suing to get out of the ACC. So what happens with them and what's next? So I don't know. I got enough to worry about with our own program, trying to keep that going in the right direction as well. And whatever conference, whoever else ends up in the conference with us, I know we're both fortunate that we're Oklahoma and South Carolina. We're both in the SEC, and in my opinion, the greatest conference in college athletics. And it's clear that a lot of people want to be in this conference. There's no doubt about it, and rightfully so. So I'm fortunate to be at a place where we do have that stability, and we're in a league that has long-term stability. And then whatever else shakes out from that, we'll see. But we got a great commissioner in Greg Sankey, and he's at the forefront of leadership when it comes to college athletics. And whatever's next, you know, trust him and hopefully the people around him to make the best decisions for college athletics.
Help me understand how pissed South Carolina fans would be if Clemson ends up in the SEC. You mentioned the ACC situation. I don't think it's any secret where they're probably trying to get.
Yeah. I think you have two.
What's that dynamic like?
I'm not saying that I'm either one of these, but I'm saying there's two, from talking to Carolina fans, there's two like ends of the spectrum. It's the, heck no, we would be ticked off. We don't want them to come in the SEC. The SEC is making all this money from a revenue standpoint. That's an advantage for us. We don't want them to be able to take part in that as well. You got that end of the spectrum, but then you got the other end of the spectrum that are like, heck yeah, let them come play in the SEC and come play, you know, the Oklahomas and the Texas and the Alabamas and the Georgias and everyone else, you know, week in, week out as well. So you hear different things from different fans as well. And it's funny to hear them debate it also, the two different ends of the spectrum when it comes to our rivals and what happens with them.
Well, they got a lot of legal work to go through, or they're going to be waiting till what, 2035 or 2036, yeah. Something crazy like that.
Yeah. Well,
tell us what we're in store for. You know, we've all said we want it. We're ready for it. Ready or not, here we come. And then, what are we getting into? What's going to be different for Oklahoma this year?
I think for the OU fans, there'll be just some awesome road trips. I'm not even sure where you guys go. I know you play obviously in Dallas again. I think I saw y'all play at LSU.
LSU last game of the year, at Auburn, at Ole Miss.
Yeah. Well, you're just in some great environments. You come to Columbia in 2025 as well. But there's, I think that's one thing, and not that there's not, you know, great fun road trips.
There's not.
We don't have to lie on here. We don't have to lie. It's fine.
You can go to TCU and hang out in Fort Worth. I mean, that's fun and all that as well. But it's going. There's some great road trips and just some awesome venues. And obviously, Oklahoma's played in SEC venues, going to Tennessee before and things like that. But just being able to do that week in, week out, there's nothing like it. The gauntlet of the schedule. Not that there's a breather in any conference, but there's some weeks where you look at it and say, I know from when I was at OU, there's some weeks you look at the schedule and you say, okay, you know, if we just play well, we're going to be okay. this Saturday, and it's not like that. I mean, it's just like, okay, you just beat so and so, and now you look at the schedule. Who we got next? Oh crap, it's another top 10 team. And it's just week after week after week, which as a competitor, you love. So great road venues. You're not going anywhere where you're playing in front of 20,000 people or 30,000 people. You're playing in some of the best stadiums in all of college athletics, some awesome road trips. And then on the field, you know, to me, the biggest thing and was just or is just the – and we may have talked about it before, but I just feel like the depth – and the athleticism of the defensive lines that you see in this conference just week in, week out, where there's not – you look at the other team and there's one or two guys you have to worry about. There's like six or seven guys that you have to be worried about just defensive line-wise. But it's awesome. I know Oklahoma's Coach Venables has recruited well and continues to build up that roster to attack it. And it'll be awesome as a competitor. You want the best team. You want a chance to compete against the best week in, week out. And that's what we tell recruits, and it's no different. And that's why coaches. You guys had a question earlier about coaches in the NFL. That's why coaches want to come here to play to a place like South Carolina, because they get to compete against the best in the best conference week in, week out.
Speaking of the best, Nick Saban retired. How different do you think that's going to feel? Just not having him. He was the face of the sport. Yeah. I think that's probably fair to say. What do you think? How different do you think it'll feel not having him on that Bama sideline?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I think it's just a loss for the sport because of what he's accomplished and the respect level that so many people have for him. And, you know, we had a in-person SEC head coaches meeting back in February in Birmingham, and it was the first time that Coach Venables and Coach Sarkisian were in the room with the other SEC coaches. And it was just strange that, you know, here's Steve Sarkisian, here's Brent Venables, but over there across the table where Nick Saban has sat, you know, for a lot longer than I've been in this league, he's not in that room, and Kalen DeBoer is in there now, and it was just a different feeling not having him in that room because I know from the in-person meetings that I've had as SEC head coaches, it's one of those when he spoke, everyone in the room shut up and listened, you know, to what he had to say, and because of the respect level or the respect that everyone in that room, you know, had for him. As a coach, but happy for him to be able to walk out on his own terms, but certainly miss his wisdom and presence in our league and in college football for sure.
Big shoes to fill, big shoes to fill. What do you think about, well, you guys don't play Texas, so you haven't dug into them much at all, but what do you think about the new teams coming in? Are they, you think, talent wise ready for that gauntlet of a schedule that you mentioned?
Yeah, I do. You know, obviously both teams have recruited really, really well. You saw what, you know, Texas did going to the college football playoff last season. Oklahoma obviously beat them in the regular season. So, you know, there's great talent there. It's the seasons that both those teams are coming off of, and they always have recruited well. And I know when I was in the Big 12, you always felt like at Oklahoma, you always felt like talent wise, Oklahoma and Texas always had, you know, a little bit more talent than the teams that we were playing in that conference. So I believe so. And they've been preparing for it now for a few years and whatnot. So no, I think they absolutely are. And it makes a great league even better.
I'm trying to figure out, are you trying to be governor of South Carolina or something? I feel like every couple months you're going to talk to Congress. What is happening, man?
Trying to like keep up with everybody else from an NIL standpoint. I don't know. I was at the State House here in Columbia earlier this year. I was in DC on Capitol Hill twice last year. So I don't know. Wherever they tell me they need me, not that anybody's listening to me. When we went to DC, it was myself and Don Staley. All they wanted to do was just talk to Don Staley, and I was just like the afterthought as well. But yeah, just trying to you know, get our state law where it's, you know, favorable and beneficial for not just South Carolina, but Clemson and Coastal Carolina and all the schools here in South Carolina. So yeah, when when I signed up to be a college football coach, I didn't know that I was going to be going before, you know, state legislatures and Congress regularly, which I feel like I have over the last year, year and a half.
You can't lie enough to be a politician, man. I'm just telling you, you would not be good at it. You're way too honest and too nice.
I know. Yeah, I hear you.
Well, I know it's a weird spot to be in that you're out there lobbying for legislation and talking about all that, but what do you think needs to happen? Like, what guardrails need to be put in? I know you have to think about it, even though it is what it is and you play by the rules that are there and there's no reason really complaining or worrying about those. But I mean, I'm sure you have thought about like what would be beneficial. Maybe the coaches have talked about this. It does seem like we're starting to hear more coaches kind of hit on the same talking points and be kind of on the same page on some things.
Yeah, I think from an NIL standpoint, I think it's great for student athletes to be able to capitalize on their name, image, and likeness. But the way the law was intended was for it not to be a recruiting inducement. And that's anybody with a brain knew that's what it was going to be. And that's what it is. And I think we're all for it, but we'd love to be able to take it out of the recruiting aspect of it and really put it in more towards your current roster and the guys that have earned the opportunity to capitalize on their name, image, and likeness. I think is something that most coaches are in the same boat with as well. Would love a little bit more transparency from an NIL standpoint, because there are a lot of figures that are get thrown around that aren't really accurate about, okay, this player's making this and this guy just got offered this at this school. And then guys go to places and maybe what they were told isn't what happens, but there's just a lot, there's no transparency right now. And I think it would clean things up as well and give some of those guardrails if there was a little bit more transparency and a little bit more the way the law was intended and less recruiting. And then the other thing, the big topic is just the transfer portal and certainly some things with that. I don't think I'm all for guys being able to capitalize or be able to leave and go to better situations. Again, we brought in Spencer and it was fantastic for us and we've utilized the portal as well, but the being able to basically transfer as many times as you want to transfer right now is a challenge. And it's not good for the players, for their academics, for their general well-being. It's just tough as well. So maybe a few more guardrails on that. And we'd love to see the recruiting calendar cleaned up a little bit. Gabe and I were talking earlier. I mean, it's really the middle of May before every coach in America knows who is going to be for sure on his roster in the upcoming season. Because we have another transfer portal opening up at the end of April. And then that window will close and hopefully we don't lose anybody. But if we do, we'll go replace them. And everybody's going to be trying to upgrade their roster after spring practice. And it's when that all settles down and guys decide where they're going to school, if they are in the portal, it's May. And it's literally the middle of May before, okay, now I know who's going to be on the 2024 football team. Now Brent Venables truly knows what the 2024 Sooners are going to look like and on and on and on. And that's a challenge right now. And I don't think that's best for everyone involved.
Shane, I'm interested in what you think about the 12-team playoff, because I feel like South Carolina is a tremendous example of the type of program where the 12-team playoff can be a great thing.
Right.
Because winning the SEC, man, it's really, really hard for any team. But does the expansion of the playoff, does that infuse a little energy in the program in any way, knowing that there are more spots to where you can end up, you know, deciding this thing on the field?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's great for the game. I mean, that was good and bad, don't get me wrong, but as far as giving more teams access, absolutely. There were years when I was here as an assistant coach, or after I left as an assistant coach, when Coach Spurrier was here, that if there had been a 12-team playoff, South Carolina would have been in it in a couple of those years. And, you look at last season, I don't know exactly how it would have shaken out, but I think they both would have been in. But last year, Missouri and Ole Miss both went 10-2. And I'm sure one of them would have been in, maybe two. I'm not sure how it all would have shaken out. But, Ole Miss, I know they had a good season in 2022. Missouri, I think, was like 6-7 in 2022. And they went from 6-7 to they would have been a playoff team last year. So absolutely, it team can lose more than one game and you don't feel like you're out of the 14 playoff hunt. And certainly gives teams access to continue to just, compete and over a 12-game season, just keep hanging in there and give yourself an opportunity to get into that 12-team playoff. And when you're in a league like the SEC, if you're one of the better teams in this conference, you're going to be in it, i.e. Alabama and Georgia last season, but then also Missouri and Ole Miss and anyone else that would have been in that mix last season.
October 19th. I'll have the guest room ready just in case, man.
Yeah. I looking forward to it. My kids are acting like it's a vacation trip. They're playing all the restaurants and everything else they want to do when they come out there and whatnot. But that'll be fun. Oh, so many of our fans. You talk about fans getting to go to new cool sites. I can't tell you how many South Carolina fans are excited about coming out there to Oklahoma as well. I mean, I've had so many come, call me already or text me or tell me when I see them out and about that they've already gotten their tickets and booked their plane flights and coming out there. So there'll be a bunch of Gamecocks that are excited about visiting Norman, Oklahoma for the first time, and then Austin, Texas, whenever we play them. But it'll be it's a lot of work to do between now and then, but that'll be fun coming back there as well. And I may hit you up and come hang out a little bit.
It's the only week I'm not going to be cheered for you, man. You know I love you. You know I love you.
Rightfully so. I'll have to make sure the radio crew and the sideline reporters are staying on their sidelines and not coming over there and trying to be too buddy buddy with the opposing
I'm going to be stealing your signals.
Are you
You're the
guys
man.
doing the
Hey.
helmet stuff? Are you guys been
Yeah.
practicing it? You like that?
We've been practicing it this spring. We're all trying to learn. It'll be fascinating. You talk about stealing signals. I think a lot of people think, okay, well, that will eliminate signaling if you have it in your earpiece or in your helmet, which I think the opposite is true. It will probably
Quarterback's got to
increase
figure
it.
it out. Yeah.
Yeah, because if you're an offense, it's going to go fast. You're still going to signal. You're not going to like tell the quarterback and then he's got to signal to the whole team. I mean, I'm sure there was, if you're like a fast offense, I would imagine most teams are still going to signal from the sidelines so they can see the signal quicker and not have to go through the quarterback to get the signal, if that makes sense. But now, if that's the case, the offensive coaches, they're going to be trying to get the defensive signals if they can. And then you can talk up until 15 seconds on the play clock. So to me, it's going to be teams are going to get to the line as quick as possible. And then you're going to have a coach in some quarterback's ear saying, okay, they're getting ready to bring Sam Will off the edge, they're playing cover zero, check to this protection, drop back and throw the corner out to Teddy or whatever it might be. I mean, I think you're going to have more of that than not, but it'll be fascinating. But yeah, we're practicing with it. And same thing with the tablets on the sidelines. We'll be able to utilize that as well. And it'll be good. I mean, we've got our offensive coordinator. He has called plays in the NFL, so it's not his first time doing it. He's got a comfort level with it, without a doubt. And like I said, our receivers coach has played in the NFL. Also, our defensive backs coach, he's coached in the NFL. Our outside linebackers coach, he's coached in the NFL. Special teams coach. So we got guys with NFL experience that have been around it, but certainly it'll be a learning experience for all of us in college athletics, myself included.
Well, I just remember watching you guys last season. You kept getting in this circle thing, and guys were talking. I was like, what is that?
Oh.
It's like on this huddle.
No, but I'm excited for this year, man. As you know, we're your biggest fans, except for that one Saturday in October. You're the man. It's always fun catching up. Thanks for the time, Shane.
No, you guys are awesome, man. Think the world of y'all. Appreciate everything you're about, football-wise and outside football.
I hope that guy wins a lot of games, just not against us.
I know it. I know it. It's going to be fun, though, man. I can't wait to host them. Looks like that's going to be fun for their group coming into town. And then I've always wanted to go there to see a game. I'm really looking forward to that in 25. That's going to be cool.
I am as well. Let's finish up with our winners and losers of the week. But first,
all right, listen up, all you beef lovers. How does two juicy ribeyes, two perfectly marbled New York strips, and two melt-in-your-mouth fillets in 12 steak burgers sound? Didier Ranch is celebrating the boss's birthday with a special on their best-selling box, the Boss Box. Get yours today and add the code Oklahoma15 at checkout to get an additional 15% off your order at DidierRanch.com. This is a limited time only special, and you don't want to miss out. This box is truly fit for a boss.
Your face when you miss. We can redo it if you want to redo it.
No. We don't. Come on. You know better than that.
Fair enough. And you should.
I sense myself messing up the Boss Box a bunch in the future. Okay.
Well, we love our partners at Didier Ranch. Go buy lots of Boss Boxes. And you should also head to the garage for hand smashed patties, butter toasted buns, and some ice cold beer. It's the perfect spot. Dang it. Now you did
yes.
it to me.
Yeah.
Damn it. No, it's the perfect spot to watch any big game. And with all the garage locations being open to 10 p.m. or later every night, it's the go-to late night spot. Visit eatatthegarage.com to find a location near you and order online from the garage in your neighborhood. As always, Ted, kicks off. Who do you have as your winner of the week?
Easy choice for me. I had to go with Jada Coleman. No big deal. Just the NFCA player of the week and the Big 12 player of the week. Listen to the series she had. Not bad. Three games. So 13 of 14 on base of her 14 at-bats. 6 of 7. Hit .857 in the series. Scored 8 runs. Walked 7 times. Had 3 multi-hit games in a row. So Jada Coleman's got it going. I think she's batting like 460 something right now in that leadoff spot. Walked like 30 something times, and she only has like, I think she's like 2 or 3 strikeouts on the season. Just incredible.
I don't know a lot, but she's real good.
Yeah,
real yep. good. And
she's probably the best fielder on the team at that center field spot.
How excited are you for the Texas matchup this weekend?
It's going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome. What are they ranked, like 4 or 5, I think? So
do we still hate Mike White?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean,
it's fun too, right?
No, I didn't say it wasn't fun. I just haven't, and maybe it's still a couple days still. The series starts, but I just haven't seen the usual amount of Mike White hate that I feel like I see from the fan base on Twitter before we play them. And maybe it's coming.
Good point. Yeah. It's going to happen. Especially after they listen to the podcast. We need to, let's crank it up out there. Listen, we can't be the fan base that holds a grudge better than anyone else. And it already be Wednesday. We're not talking about Mike White yet.
I am excited that's Saturday night. What isn't it Saturday night primetime on ABC or is it? No,
I
it's ESPN.
So.
It's ESPN.
It's ESPN.
I think.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool. That's a big one.
Primetime ABC is the Renegades. Saturday night against St. Louis.
As
AJ McCarron,
as you always say, Oklahoma's just the center of the sports universe,
right? Right.
That was a good one.
By the way, OU has had four straight Big 12 players of the week, 4 different players, 4 consecutive weeks. Pretty amazing.
I'm just not surprised by anything now with the program.
I know.
We're so spoiled when it comes to softball. It's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
All right, who do you have as your loser of the week?
I had to go with OU men's hoops.
Ugh.
Or what's left of them. Jalen Moore. Come on, man. Come on.
Please stay, Jalen Moore.
On. Come on. Please stay.
It was early in the season, Jalen Moore, and I was telling people, hey, he's our best player. He's the best athlete we got. Just wait. He's going to come on. And you did. You ended up being really, really good. Please stay.
Please stay. Yeah. McCollum in the portal. Uzan, Owe. Yeah, it's
Hughley.
Hughley. We're starting over. We've rinse and repeat on building an entire new roster.
I feel bad for Porter, man. And I know that it's his job to retain his guys. Like, I understand that. Now, of course, there's an NIL aspect to all of this stuff. But it just, I don't know about you. I just saw a lot of people. It just felt very deflating for the fan base.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like Porter's been here 3 years, and like the fan base has had three entire new teams to learn, essentially, 3 years in a row. And that's not what we love about college sports. What you love about college sports is seeing dumb freshmen come in and screw things up and then get better and better and better. And by the time they're a junior and senior, they're leaders of the team. I mean, the growth of those players is what you love about college sports. It's what sets it apart from everything else. And you think about, like, our last Final Four team, that group stayed together the entire time. They all improved so much as players, and that would not exist in today's world. We'll never have a team like, if things stay the way they are, we won't have a team that does something like that, to where you know everyone on the team, you're invested in them, you care about them because you've watched them grow, and it's just a weird sport to be in right now.
With the way that it is, with the rules how they are right now in college basketball, dude, I'm not sure we're ever going to get that again.
I know.
This isn't only, and that's the thing, like, I feel bad for OU fans. I feel bad for Porter Moser. But this is happening at all kinds of programs. Yeah. And I think, I
mean, how many transfer guys are in the Final Four right now? I mean,
we're still going to watch the tournament, right? We're still going to watch regular season games, but I'd be lying to you if I said it feels the same as it used to. It just doesn't. Now, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like, I feel like I'm still a passionate OU basketball fan, but there's definitely something to what you're saying when it comes to, I don't know, a lack of attachment to the players.
Yeah.
Like a lack of a, not to go too deep, but like an emotional connection with the players where you invested in them.
As like, think about how many young OU fans, like, go to games and, like, they have their favorite players. Like, they're not just their favorite players. Like, they love these guys. Like, Baker Mayfield playing all those years at quarterback and Buddy Hill playing all those years and getting bet. Like, kids love those guys. You don't have enough time to, like, in a one and done year to, like, have it be a part of your childhood from, like, the year of 8 to 12. Like, that's what I remember of that time growing up, is watching Buddy Hield play or watching Baker Mayfield and all the, like, it's, it's going to be like a hodgepodge of different guys. It's weird.
My son will turn 3 in June. He can tell you who Shea is. He can tell you who Giddy is. He can tell you who J-Dub is. He can tell you who Chet is. And it's because he's been exposed to them multiple years in a row.
Yeah.
And we watch a ton of OU basketball. And I had him working on the names, but now I got to say, hey, buddy, we got to learn some new names. So that's interesting you bring that up. I hadn't really thought about it. But yeah, well, he can rattle off the Thunder guys.
And it's compounding because whenever those Baker Mayfield fans grow up and have families, like it's like you want to see, I want to take you to where you can have your favorite player. But if these young kids don't ever have like that, it's just not going to be as ingrained, if that makes sense. And like the tradition of, you know, families constantly going, I mean, and they're still going to go. I'm not saying they're not going to go, but it's not going to be as ingrained.
Is it possible that we see the women's team maybe become that? If we can hold on to Junior Baranchuk for a long time, because I don't know, maybe it's just college basketball in general and it's never going to be the same. And I'm just hoping that, you know, college football feels a little bit like that now, but not quite to the extreme that college basketball is. So
I wish someone would tell these kids, and maybe they have told them, but I don't know. There's like 300 Division I basketball programs. I don't know how many basketball guys there are, but it is hard as hell to go to the NBA to play. And if you're a good, solid basketball player and you go play at 3 different schools, your legacy is that there's nothing there. You know, you go play 4 years somewhere and you don't have to be great, but people are going to remember you and remember the teams, and you can go back there for alumni stuff, or you can live in that town. And you don't get any of that whenever you play at 3 different schools and you spend 1 year. You ain't going to get that.
I think the perfect example, and I brought this up when it happened, Hunter Dickinson, I'm sure he got a nice chunk of change to go to Kansas. He was the man at Michigan. Mm-hmm. The man. Whole fan base loved him. And I'm not going to say he threw it all away, but he left that behind to go play the 1 year at Kansas. Mm-hmm. He's got really nothing to show for it. Didn't win the Big 12. Didn't make a deep run in the tournament. What's that mean for the rest of his life? He probably could have done anything he wanted at Michigan.
Yeah.
It's just, I know a lot of these guys are just trying to make as much money as they can in college because, like you mentioned, it's hard as hell to get to the NBA. There's a bunch of overseas options. I understand that. But I just hope that these guys, and I'm not just talking about the guys that are leaving OU, but these guys in general are not giving up a chance at having a legacy somewhere for money that they don't end up getting. Like, I hope they're getting what they're being promised, because it'd be a shame to leave somewhere where you were building something. And then, I don't know, man, it's complicated.
I'd never be able to convince anyone of this. And, you know, and I totally understand. And I know it sounds really stupid, but that money is so like meaningless compared to what it means to play somewhere and like have like a home, a place where you played, a place where you built like lifelong relationships with teammates that you played and fought and went through conditioning together for 4 years. Like that amount, that money is, it doesn't mean anything. Like the experience is like the best part about it. And, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm being dramatic. Maybe you can still have a great experience playing at three different schools, but it sure doesn't seem like you would.
It can't feel the same.
Right.
It can't feel the way that it feels for you and I when we walk on that campus in Norman. It just can't.
Can you walk on a campus like if you played like your junior year there, like had a cup of coffee?
It's a great question. We should find someone that's played for three or four different schools and be like, hey, what's your relationship like with each spot?
No one's gonna stop like, at? No one's gonna know who you are or I don't know. It's just weird. There's like gonna be a bunch of nomads in a generation of college athletes that are like don't have anywhere to go for alumni day.
Someone that is really good at basketball, come to OU out of high school and play 4 years here. Everyone will love you.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be great. You'll be the guy. You'll have an era to yourself.
This got very deep. I don't know how we're here, but we are. I wish nothing but the best.
Jalen
Moore's
going to be that guy.
Come on, Jalen Moore. You can be that guy, Jalen.
You can be that guy.
All right, let's get to my winner and loser. But first.
All right, listen up, Oklahoma sports fans. Don't miss your chance to meet some local star athletes and support our state. Join OU legend Sterling Shepard, OU pitcher Kelly Maxwell, and Hooper Peyton Verhulst, and more at the Oklahoma State Capitol on April 8th for the American Heart Association Rally Day. They're rallying for crucial legislation to ensure cardiac emergency plans are in place at schools across Oklahoma. Every year, thousands of young athletes and fans across the country suffer from sudden cardiac arrest. Having proper emergency plans in place saves lives. So mark your calendar for April 8th to rally with Sterling Shepard at the Oklahoma State Capitol. Visit heart.org/Oklahoma for more information.
And attention, business owners, you need Insurica in your life. Insurica is one of the country's largest insurance brokers with 30 offices throughout Oklahoma, Texas, and the Southwest. Insurica is able to customize programs by accessing the latest information from many insurance carriers. They compare and contrast coverage offerings and pricing in order to design a cost-effective, comprehensive program to meet your business's specific needs. If your business partners with Insurica, you'll save huge amounts of money and take control of your total cost of risk. If your business wants to be best in class, connect with Insurica at Insurica.com. That's Insurica.com. And head to oplisclothing.com. You are just... I really hope people are listening to the ads this episode. They're just fantastic. You want
head
it?
Head to oplisclothing.com for our podcast merchandise and the best OU gear out there. That's OPOLISClothing.com and use promo code TED, TED for 10% off. That's oplisclothing.com. Use promo code TED for 10% off. Buttery soft and 10% off.
12.3 million people were watching. And Caitlin Clark delivered. My winner of the week. There are so many storylines coming into that game, right? The rematch between Iowa and LSU. I don't know. There couldn't have been much more hype than there was around that game. And Caitlin Clark comes out there and drops 41, 12 assists, 7 boards, and walks away with the win. I mean, factoring all the circumstances, Ted, that's one of the better performances we've seen in a long, long time in college basketball. Dude, that was awesome to watch.
Was
And
she
that
at
first
nine
half,
threes or
oh,
something
yeah,
crazy like
dude.
that?
And some of them, it was that helpless feeling when you're watching Steph Curry, when he's just torching your team. Like that's how, where it's just anything he puts up's going in. She was in that type of zone. I've got questions for Kim Mulkey about how they approached her with their defensive plan. I got lots of questions, but after losing to them in the title game last year and all of the stuff that has been discussed leading up to that game, for her to come out and to play that way, man, stud.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And I think it's fair to say that she's a superstar, and so is Angel Reese and those girls on the LSU squad. But I did you see the list of like of football games that didn't have as many viewers? The only regular season college football game that had more viewers was Ohio State, Michigan. And I think the only games that in postseason that had more were the championship and the playoffs and maybe another bowl game. But after that, that's it. I mean, that's massive numbers. Massive.
She is head and shoulders, not even close, the biggest star in college basketball.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she just, and it's honestly interesting that she's gonna, I'm interested to see what type of effect she has on the WNBA when she gets there. I think that's gonna be really interesting to
Yeah.
monitor, but looking at this game, I was really impressed with Iowa. That team was playing faster than LSU. I did not see
Yeah.
that coming.
They look good. They look good. Yeah, it was wild, and they held it together at the end, and LSU just couldn't close the gap on them. But yeah, I mean, in a game where I don't remember what the was it like 9 million or something that watched the championship last year.
Yeah.
When you're going into a game and you know that there's going to be maybe more eyeballs on that game than any other women's basketball game in the history of the sport, and to be able to go out there and perform under those circumstances is impressive.
No doubt. I'm very excited to watch Iowa UConn. That's going to be awesome. But I want to see Iowa South Carolina in the national title game.
Yeah.
Isn't that what everyone wants to see? Just to see if Caitlin Clark can pull that off.
Yeah. Yep. That's what everyone wants to see. And man, it's crazy. It's been two or three really good years for women's hoops. Like they got it rolling pretty good. And with how good softball has done. And that sport's growing and doing really good viewership numbers. Got some good stuff rolling.
Yeah. The Caitlin Clark train rolls on. We'll see. Should be a tid. I think it is gonna, I think the women's Final Four is gonna do big time numbers. So I think that if you are one of those people that are tired of the Caitlin Clark coverage,
Better
tough
go find a
luck.
cave.
Yeah. Better find a rock to crawl under.
It's interesting with her. It's almost like you could, like she could maybe make more money outside of the WNBA. It's interesting. They've never had a star like that. They've had some big stars.
Yeah, I just don't know if she can make it. Like, can she take this momentum and bring it to the WNBA?
Yeah.
I mean, people can predict it one way or the other, but no one knows. I think it's going to be fascinating to find out. Either way, she is going to make a fortune off the court.
Yes. Yep.
And she always has the opportunity to go play overseas. There's a lot of people that are going to want to have her on their team,
And they
whether
make, don't
it's,
they make more money overseas, the
yeah, some
women's
of them.
hoops?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So We'll see how it works out, but I will enjoy watching your last couple of college games.
Oh, yeah.
Loser of the week. Thought about going with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Had them. Had the 76ers. Embiid made his comeback. Thunder didn't have Shea, didn't have J-Dub, and we're still in such a great position to get a road win. And then 22-9 run to close the game for the 76ers. Things got tight, and you didn't have your two go-to guys. I think that was their first game to not have one of those two guys, and it kind of showed. There looked like there was a little confusion, maybe a little hesitancy. But ultimately, you've got three wide open looks to tie the game and probably send it into overtime. And Isaiah Joe misses two wide open threes, and Jalen Williams misses another. This is a frustrating loss, Ted. I was happy to see Embiid back. I didn't think he looked particularly good, just physically. He's wearing an O-line knee brace. Never what you want to see.
But it's got to be like this long.
The biggest knee brace you've ever seen. But I was just a little disappointed. We'll see if Shea and J-Dub play against Boston. I think that's the game that everyone's really, really excited about if those two guys can go. But had it and let it slip away. I want that number one seat. I want it real bad.
You think they'll get there?
I don't see why not.
How many games are left? It's got to be 8, 7.
I mean, talk about something so I can look it up really quick. Say something insightful, Ted. They are 52-23, so that is 75, meaning they have 7 games left.
7 games, yeah. That would be crazy, though, if they got the one seed. That would be crazy.
Currently in a 3-way tie for first with Minnesota and Denver. However, Denver, I believe, is about to beat San Antonio, so that could look a little different.
And did you say, I feel like you said 1 week they had the tiebreaker against Minnesota?
They also have the tiebreaker against Denver.
Against Denver, okay.
So, we'll see, but my loser of the week, people, if you don't like big men, not your week. Purdue NC State on Saturday, Ted. I cannot wait to watch DJ Burns and Zach Edey go at it. And I know there's a lot more to that matchup than those two guys, but it's what I'm excited to watch. I don't really care about the other players. And Purdue's a big favorite. I think 8.5-point favorite. But there's no chance I'm betting against NC State right now. Did you see the line of people that were at the Applebee's in Raleigh to see DJ Burns? I mean, come on, man. He's the man of the people.
He is. I'm with you, though. It's a little bit of a throwback. I think it's great. Here's the thing. I don't like watching basketball where they dump it down to the post every single play. Come down the floor and get it to the biggest guy on the floor. I'm not a fan of that. But what I like is variety. I like variety. I like a little bit of inside game, a guy with his back to the basket. And then you can hit some threes, you could run a transition. All that stuff's great, but I want to see a little bit of everything in a hoops game.
Completely agree. I'm definitely a fan of space and some pace, but I'm excited to watch DJ Burns feed the big fella. I want to see him go to work.
Yeah.
Got to stay out of foul trouble against Edey. That could be tough.
Oh man. But that running left-handed hook, man, isn't it nice?
I am going to cheer so loud when he makes the first one of those over Edey. I feel like everyone's going to be cheered for NC State because of him.
Oh, yeah. And what's the deal? Why does everyone hate Edey so much?
I don't know if people hate him. I just think he's gigantic. So people are like, What is this? Like, of course he's good at basketball. He's 7'4". This is so boring to watch. A lot of people don't like the fact that he gets so many foul calls. Now, it appears, if my social media timeline is any indicator, that he has earned some more respect from a video of him that was circulating this week. But that's, you know, we won't go down that road.
That's so funny.
Game on and off the court, apparently, for Zach.
When I saw that video, I had the same reaction as the girl in the background did.
It's so funny because the best part of that video is how much he has to duck to get underneath the door.
I know. And he's also, I don't know if he's holding a beer can or whatever, but it looks like he's holding a thimble. I mean, it's like disappears in his hand. You can almost not even tell that he's holding it.
So good. But hey, the other game should be a really good one. I just think UConn's an absolute wagon. I don't think Alabama's going to be able to hit enough threes. I think UConn's going to choke the life out of them. But I think it's, we talked about the women's side. I think both Final Fours are going to be a lot of fun, man.
Yeah. Yep. What's NC State's chances, you think, against Purdue?
I'm not betting against them. I'm really not. I don't think they have anyone that can stop Edie, but I don't think anyone has anyone that can other than UConn. Klingon, that may be the matchup we're headed for, and sign me up. I want to watch it.
Yeah.
Well, but I hope DJ Burns has 40 and sends him to the championship game.
For NC State to take Duke out of the tournament and beat North Carolina in the ACC championship, it's already been one hell of a year.
Oh, my gosh.
Can you imagine?
Their fans have to be so thrilled.
Oh, it's got to be the greatest thing ever.
Birthday shout-outs. Happy 16th birthday to Kasia.
Happy 27th birthday to Mason McCauley.
Happy 51st birthday to Judge Russell Baclaw. Judge Russell Baclaw, final answer.
Happy 74th birthday to Jane McCauley.
And on that note, episode 410 in the books. We'll have a new podcast that'll drop on Sunday. Programming note, next week, Eddie Radosovich, Masters preview.
Yes, it's that time of year, baby.
Yes, it is. Just a reminder, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and please subscribe to our YouTube channel as well. Hope you all have a great rest of your week. Have an awesome weekend, and until next time, we appreciate y'all for listening. Do what you always do, Oklahoma. Take care of each other.
Just one more.